You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Hey, I'm Joe.
And I'm Joel.
From the editing bay here on the Next Wave Radio Network, and we've got something very fun for all of you Next Wave listeners. We've got our first live show coming up April 11th at the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano, if you're in the DFW area. We're going to be watching the live-action Dolph Lundgren He-Man movie.
Yes.
With a whole bunch of cool giveaways. We've got plastic swords to give to people so they can hold them aloft and call upon the power of Grayskull. We're also going to have little skull pencil erasers, all kinds of giveaways, raffles, door prizes, and some special surprises still on the way. We've also got a stand-up comedian, and then it's all going to be followed up with a live recording of the podcast where Joel and I are going to tear the movie a new one.
Joe, that sounds fantastic. However did we get the sponsorship for this?
Well, it's thanks to our friends at Duncanville Bookstore. They're located at 101 West Camp Wisdom Suite J in Duncanville, Texas. They sell comics, they sell toys, they have board games. Not only do they sell these things,
yes,
but they will buy them from you. So if you've got a bunch of crap sitting around that's taking up space and you're like, you know what, spring cleaning, or I could use a few extra bucks, or I want to buy some stuff at the comic shop but I don't have a whole bunch of cash on me, maybe I could trade some stuff in. All you got to do is call the guys up at 972-298-7546. Andy, Brian, those guys can help you out. If you want to check out their website, DuncanvilleBookstore.com, and you'll see them as well as Joel and I at our live show April 11th. For more details, you can check out our website. Joel, what is that?
That is editingbay.com. Not the editing bay, not edit bay, editingbay.com.
And right there, you'll find more info about the show. You'll find other episodes of the show.
All of them.
But more importantly, information about our live show, April 11th, the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano, $5. And we're going to be kicking things off at about 7:30. Hopefully, we'll see you there. Some Lando Calrissian.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
But he had, like, seriously the worst dance routines ever. And then, like, after three shows, they brought him on, and they're like, yeah, unfortunately, you've got some news to share with us. He's like, yeah, I've got a bad back, so I'm going to have to back out. What I think happened is that, like, actual dancers, actual people that are doing good jobs were getting voted off, but because of the Star Wars contingent, he kept getting saved. And so, like, he wasn't going anywhere.
Well, but that's assuming that the voters are actually deciding. See, I call bullshit on all that stuff.
I think
it's fixed.
Because I vote. I did for this season. I voted for Billy D.
Listen, man, if you want to pull the wool over your eyes and think that you actually have a say in this democracy, man.
What are you talking about? Are you saying
man, open your eyes.
Like, predetermined
results? I'm saying the fucking Illuminati is behind it all, man.
No, you know what the Illuminati is behind?
What's that, Joe?
The triangle of life.
Hey!
The triangle of time.
It's the Triforce.
That's what this is. You know what? First off, hello.
This is
the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
And mine is Joel.
And we've got Matt Doden in the studio with us. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Joe and Joel.
As as you've probably heard, we've got this live show thing coming up this Friday at the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano.
Might have mentioned it once or twice.
Once or twice. We might have little promos that we play before and after. Yeah. But Matt is going to be our opening act. And
yay,
we thought, you know, it'd be really fun to get him in here to talk about a movie beforehand. That way,
I'm going to try to tell jokes.
We can acclimate ourselves to Matt, and as well, you can acclimate yourself, the listener, to the soothing tones of Matt Doden.
Get to know this voice, ladies and gentlemen.
and yes, today we're going to be talking about Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
I'm glad that you pronounced it by its actual name.
It's the actual name. It's Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
That's right.
Kind of like Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
But like, not even like a colon or a comma or no, it's just Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Is Raider her last name?
Yeah. It is, actually.
Tomb Hermit.
So this movie was made in 2001, or it was released in 2001.
Right.
And this was, you know, this was like her big star push, her big action star push. Before your Mr. and Mrs. Smith, before Salt, we had Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. Now, she was the big big hot thing with both men and women at the time.
Yes, she was. Have we said her name yet, by the way, for the uninitiated?
Angelina Jolie.
Of course. She needs no introduction.
I really think that, yeah, I feel like everybody who sees what's about to come on, like when they see the title of this podcast,
yeah,
they're going to know. Like, they're going to be like, oh, it's kind of like whenever Jason Statham comes out with like a new Transporter, mm-hmm, or a new, you know, whatever the hell his movies are. I always feel like they don't even need titles. They just call them Jason Statham 1, Jason Statham 2. That's what I feel like. Like at this point, Angelina Jolie was turning into like the female Jason Statham.
Yeah.
It was just Angelina Jolie 1, Angelina Jolie 2. There was a big deal made about this movie, obviously because it was a very highly successful video game franchise. But there was a big deal made about like her boobs.
Oh, yeah.
She's got like, she needs to have those Lara Croft boobs. And so they enhanced her chest
movie. I heard that she's, what is she, normally like a 34B?
I don't know.
Just off the top of my head.
I don't know.
Just hypothetically.
I have no idea.
Yeah. And apparently, I guess, the Lara Croft, I don't know who did the dimensions on the 3D, you know, non-existent character, but apparently she's like a 34DD or something. Mm-hmm. So they met in the middle with a 34C.
And they just, yeah, they gave her something. I don't know what it was. It's just so obvious that she's wearing an enhancement throughout this entire movie.
They're like pointy.
Yeah. Well, they're pointy. Yeah, exactly. They're not, there's nothing natural about the way that they're hanging.
No.
Plus, I don't know if you noticed this, like throughout almost the whole movie, on her right side, there's like this boxy protrusion, and I couldn't tell if that was the receiver for like a wireless mic or something, or if that was the harness that they had put on her, and it just wasn't sitting right.
To harness her boobs.
Yeah, to harness the power.
Harness the power
of Lara Croft's boobs.
Wow.
I will say that I wish that they'd focused a little bit more on like the script and the production than the boobs in this movie.
I think they focused on the movie poster, and because you look at that movie poster, it looks identical to like the PlayStation DVD box or CD or whatever the fuck that came on back
in the
PlayStation days. Lit that properly, made sure the dimensions were right, and then started writing a script.
I don't know if anybody noticed anything but the boobs. I mean, who's noticing the script?
I did. Hand up.
It's hard not to. It jumps out at you. I have some questions about this script that maybe you guys can illuminate.
Okay, so just overall, you know, Lara Croft is, she's an archaeologist in a way. You know, she's kind of like Indiana Jones, but without the whip and a couple of pistols. And what you get in the video game, now I'm not a huge expert when it comes to the Tomb Raider video games, but what I do remember is it takes place in a fucking tomb. Like the whole thing takes place in a tomb that she is raiding.
Yes.
And she's shooting like bears and wolves. I don't know if there's ever a point where you're fighting against humans.
Yeah.
But she does a whole fuckload of that in this movie.
It's all. And like inanimate objects and stone creatures and all sorts of fantastical
right
things.
And it all coincides with the date of May 15th, and that's supposed to be like when the planets are aligning. And
how often does that happen, Joe?
Every 5,000 years.
Wow, how did you pull that number out of your ass? Maybe because they fucking repeat it three times within the first 10 minutes.
They mention 5,000 years as many times as they say the phrase Tomb Raider in this movie.
That is true. Is a Tomb Raider an actual thing?
I don't think it is.
They refer to it as a title. Like she would have business cards that say Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
Yeah, no, I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all. It's just something that they had to pull out so that way you remembered what movie you were fucking watching.
It's like common knowledge, though. People refer to, she's a tomb. Do we really need two Tomb Raiders on this?
The Tomb Raider. It's like an archaeology, but to go and just trash the place.
It's like if you were watching Michael Bay's Transformers movie and like Shia LaBeouf eight times in the movie was like, you're Transformers. I need to find the Transformers. Where are the Transformers? Like. Yeah. You guys are Transformers. Stop it, you silly Transformers.
Well, you see, every 100 years, the Transformers align and come out from space.
Every 100 years.
Wow, pretty good.
My name is Optimus Prime. No, that's more like Casey Kasem.
I was going to say, is that who you were doing? I'm digging the Howard Stern bass on your voice.
Oh, thanks,
though,
man.
Should use that mic all the time.
Oh, yeah. How are we doing? It's the Love Master.
Matt, we're going to need some time alone.
All right, so 5,000 years, the alignment of the planets, and the Illuminati that you mentioned earlier, they're after this triangle of time. Or I can't remember if that's what it was called or not.
The Golden
Who
Triangle?
Cares? The Golden Triangle. Yes.
I love that mall. sorry. That is a deep reference.
It is a deep cut.
For all my Denton friends.
So the Illuminati's trying to get a hold of this thing, and the guy from Game of Thrones who follows Khaleesi around, played by Ian Glen, is working for the Illuminati. He's trying to find this thing, and it just so happens that Lara Croft's father was also looking for this. Lara Croft's father, played by John Voight.
How about that?
Yeah.
This is, I guess, when they were still speaking, right?
Well,
or are we on the cusp?
That was on the cusp, I thought.
I think it was on the cusp.
It was like, yeah, getting together for this was a big thing.
Uh-huh. Well, that would explain something later on in the movie that I won't spoil.
Yeah, that last scene. We'll make sure we talk about that because it was like, it was very awkward.
A little bit.
So we meet up. We meet up with Lara Croft and, you know... it already hurts. It already hurts talking about this because it's that weird opening. Like they were really trying to kick things off with a bang, mm-hmm. and like this is Lara Croft. She's a badass. And instead of having her be like in the middle of recovering an actual artifact,
maybe fucking
like
raiding would, a tomb,
raiding a fucking tomb.
Yeah,
like at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark,
right.
maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they did that, right? And like Raiders of the Lost Ark, he went in, he got the idol, and what we achieved through that was we found out that Indiana Jones is kind of a badass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not infallible though.
Right.
And also set up the whole, you know, the conflict between him and Belloc straight from the beginning.
Right. Yeah.
We failed to do that completely in this movie. It starts off with this whole weird, like, sequence where she has, and I'm not, I don't, the X-Men have this, where they've got, like,
yes,
this training room.
I hate it.
They have a training room in their fucking home. I'm not against that. I know it's a convention that's been created, but really, like, who's creating death traps in their own home just to train themselves?
I know.
Against killer robots.
She almost
remarkably
dies.
Exquisite death traps, by the way.
Right?
Like 20 years ahead of technology, also, uh-huh. I would say. She's harboring this technology all for herself. Like, this could be used. You know, we could have drones by now.
Right.
Whatever years it was. 2001.
And so it starts off with this, you know, this high octane, I'm using air quotes, this high octane fight between her and this robot, and all it really consists of is her jumping around and shooting a lot of fucking bullets into this robot.
At a metal object.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's going to end well, because that's how you kill robots. With bullets.
But she ends up just telling it stop, and it stops. I don't know what we set up in this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we were supposed to be seeing like, oh, look, she's a skilled acrobat, and she's also pretty badass with a couple of pistols. I don't know if we were setting that up. If so... We were setting it up for no reason because we don't see those skills come into play
right.
until probably an hour later into this movie.
And that's what I think that first scene is. It's almost like an apology for the next 30 minutes.
No,
promise there's going to be some action later on, but for now,
I disagree. I disagree completely because I think the apology, where is this? The apology comes 7 minutes into the movie when she's in the shower.
Oh, yeah.
And we see all kinds of side boob.
Side boob.
And she's like, I've never seen, like, I've taken showers.
Mm-hmm.
I've been with women who've taken showers.
I hope so there too.
I've watched them shower.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody showers like Lara Croft showers in this movie.
And how does she do it?
Like a fucking Pantene commercial where she's whipping her head around.
That's
right. And, oh, nobody fucking showers like
soft
that.
Light.
It was, this movie is completely geared towards 13-year-old boys.
Yes.
Who just would play fucking Tomb Raider in their homes with their fucking shorts around their ankles.
Well.
And just go at it and like had to press pause, try to find that perfect way to press pause.
That frame.
And like take care of business.
This was like one of the first video games, or at least the ones that I played, where they really got into the physics of how boobs move, and there was like bouncing, you know, because before, you know, back in the 8-bit days, everything was just like stationary. There was no independent movement.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like Virtual Fighter and this and there was a whole, it was a golden era of polygon boobs that happened around circa 1994 or 5
when
the movie came out.
No, absolutely. That's the 3D era of the first PlayStation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what you were getting.
I had no idea there's all this technology in video game boobs. I mean, you know, come on.
It was a long
I've never played this game.
Doden's like making a list and he's like, buy a PlayStation. Tomb Raider. Boobs.
Much like the space program, there were a number of like, you know, tests and failures. And this was like the Apollo 11 of... which one got lost? Apollo 13?
Apollo 13.
Virtual Fighter 6.
They made a movie about it. You may have heard of it.
Not familiar with it.
It was called Apollo 13.
Never heard of it. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. It's got Forrest Gump in it. The guy who played Chet from Weird Science, he's in there too.
Wow.
All right, so...
That is Sir Bill Paxton. You show due respect.
Texas's own Bill Paxton.
Oh, wow.
So just to strengthen my argument a little bit more that this movie was made for 13-year-old boys, mm-hmm. in the middle, I don't know if you caught this, in the middle of that opening fight with the robot, The robot that's named Simon, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Caught that.
Do you think that's a reference to the director, Simon West?
Wikipedia tells me so.
Yeah? Oh, I didn't check out the Wikipedia entry.
That's okay. But that's a good call. That's what they surmise. And we should mention, this is the second movie that we've done on an Editing Bay podcast
and
directed by Simon
and
West.
Didn't know. We had no idea.
No.
You texted me last night while I was in the middle of watching it.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, oh my God, dude, I didn't know that this thing was directed by Simon West. I didn't either.
A couple of weeks ago, we did a Nick Cage movie that came out, 2012 called Stolen. You've probably never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
I'm telling from the furrowed eyebrows on Matt here that he too has not. Well, you probably didn't hear of it because it was pulled from theaters 2 weeks after it was released. It made like $300,000 in opening weekend. It was a failure beyond failures.
As do a lot of Nick Cage movies.
Yeah, I know, but this one took the crop.
Hey, Doden, did you ever see Taken?
Yes.
Okay, Stolen was Taken with bars of gold.
Taken with bars of gold.
Yes. I don't know if you caught this in that opening fight where she's fighting the robot. Suddenly the score pumps in and there's like sexy female moans when she's like loading her gun and the robot's like punched through and she's laid down and the robot's like punched holes through like this thing that she's hiding behind.
Oh, yeah?
And she loads the gun and looks at the gun and you hear in the score, ah. It's like, what? What the fuck was that? Like this is the most moronic thing. Like in the middle of this action sequence, this is not gearing me up. It's making me think like, do I have a fucking TV on in the other room with one of those like late night call me commercials?
You left your laptop on.
So we talked about the Simon robot. Does that mean that Daniel Craig's character, Alex West, mm-hmm. is also a reference to Simon West?
Oh, I didn't even make that connection.
No?
Wow, what a fucking narcissist to just like
insert his name
into the script of all the characters.
Here, there, you're just like running fucking anagrams all through all the cast members.
Well, I mean, come on, it's Tomb Raider. It's all about figuring out puzzles and stuff, right? Didn't you guys get in that same mindset?
Well,
no, you were too busy focusing on the boobs.
Exactly.
I was staring at tits. Yeah,
I mean. Doden's like, there was a movie? Like, he was just watching the menu screen for an hour and a half.
There's the time she's on the screen, and the rest of the time, like, all right.
But yeah, you're totally right. That first 5 minute sequence, it just plays like a fan film. Like, you know, that could have been its own little self encapsulated YouTube video.
It would have been a cool little short.
That would have been enough.
It's not how you open up a movie like this. Mm. Because all that we've established is that Lara Croft is a dick to robots and to party mixes. because her party mix sucks. Right? Am I alone on this?
I went out and bought the soundtrack. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right.
I was jamming it all the way over here.
Fuck me. I guess I know nothing about music.
No, you're right. It feels very 90s. Even though this was, what would you say, 2001?
2001.
That's right. Right before 9/11.
Yeah, 2001.
A harbinger, perhaps, one might say.
the reason, some might say. This is why they hate us so much
is because
of Tomb Raider. Did it seem to you like the dialogue was recorded like really fucking low, especially in the first like half of this movie?
I'm starting to question the surround sound system you were using. You're hearing all these moans in the soundtrack, and you're saying the dialogue is low.
Maybe it was my fucking neighbors. maybe it wasn't the soundtrack that I was hearing.
I didn't notice that. What do you mean? Elaborate.
Like when she's there's the sequence where the guy's talking to the Illuminati, mm-hmm. and he's talking about like, you know, how long it's going to take to find the triangle of power or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we cut back to her, and she's looking through like this huge high powered telescope.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, she has, like, a fucking planetarium in her house. And she's looking through this telescope, and she's talking to her butler about the alignment.
Right.
I couldn't fucking hear a thing she was saying.
She is kind of doing that closed mouth. I would say she's by far the best actress or actor in this entire film. Would you agree with that?
Uh-oh. I don't know.
Really?
I don't agree.
I was digging what she was putting down.
Really?
Man. Yeah. It was kind of subtle, little smirks and smiles. I kind of bought the accent for the most part.
Wow.
Yeah.
The accent seemed weird. You know, partially, like, I pick up what you say, like, the father. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
She marbles it.
Just kind of marbly mumbled it. And it was kind of odd to me, like, she's playing a Brit against Daniel Craig, who's playing the American. Like, how often do you get to see movies, you know, where there's a Brit playing an American playing a Brit opposite each other, and you sit there and watch them both just
mumble their shit.
Well, but he was doing the opposite. He was doing this, the worst white person. Like,
he was doing the same voice
Lara.
He did in Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, was he doing an American accent?
That was the same accent he did.
He almost
in that
sounded
movie.
Like Heath Ledger's Joker in a couple of the lines. He was
yes.
just like, Lara, come back here.
So, there was a point in this movie where, like, fucking James Bond shows up.
Yeah.
I had no fucking idea that James Bond was in this movie. I didn't remember that he was in this thing. And apparently, we're supposed to establish that these two had some kind of history.
Mm hmm.
And there was no fucking
I'm not
chemistry.
Buying that at all.
There was no chemistry at all.
First
going
of all, isn't she like
characters.
6'1 and he's like 4'9? Like, you could tell he was standing on apple boxes.
There's
never
nothing
seen
wrong with
together.
Short guys.
I'm not
being
saying
with tall
that. Chicks. I get in trouble every time I say this. What Matt. Is, feel what me. Is you got to feel me, Matt.
No,
right?
I totally understand.
Yeah,
what you're
he's way
from.
Too tiny. And Hulk-like.
The fucking Twin Towers over here. I got to hear it from you, too.
Oh, another 9/11 joke, huh?
You started. So here we are. We're 15 minutes into the Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
And we still have yet to have raided a tomb.
Raided a tomb.
So we're 15 minutes in, and her first major archaeological discovery is unearthed in her own foyer. It's right under her stairs.
It's always the last place you look, Joe.
It's like she hears a ticking. She wakes up and she hears a ticking.
It's what they call hiding in plain sight.
And beats the shit out of her staircase and then like finds a room underneath. The lights work. She just knows to reach for a switch and the light works and she finds a fucking a clock in a box.
Can we stop down for a second?
Please.
Where the fuck is she living? What does she do? How is she in this mansion?
She is the daughter of Richard Croft.
But how did he get this money? Like,
I don't know. Whatever it
Lord
is that-
Lord Richard Croft, by the way.
I'm
That's right.
Sorry, you're right.
He's a man of title.
Lord Richard Croft.
God's sake, sir.
He has, who has a stone tent in the backyard.
Yeah, that's where he was buried. Not in the foyer, along
but
with a-
Apparently, but there's no body. They just talk about how he went missing.
Yeah, well, he is missing.
But in is time. He missing or is he dead?
Well, we don't find that out until Act 3, Joe.
We don't find out ever.
Well, then you got to see the sequel, Lara Croft, Tomb Raider,
the Cradle,
the Cradle
of Life,
whatever it's called. I don't believe there's any colons in that one, too.
I don't
think so.
I don't
think
so
either. It's one sentence.
So she finds this clock, and she takes it to this auction house where they try to set up this cute little. Did she bid on an auction? Did she not? It just plays.
It plays
like fucking water.
It's like a fucking Three's Company script warmed over from the 70s. Like,
yeah, there's nothing wrong with Three's Company.
No.
I would have been happy to see Mr. Furley pop up in this. Oh,
that would have been awesome.
That's who should have played. 500. Lord Richard Croft should have been Don Knotts.
Oh my god!
That would have been fucking amazing. So they go to this auction house, and that's where she meets up with Daniel Craig, and we kind of set up the fact that there's a little bit of a rivalry between the two, and that's when we first hear the phrase Tomb Raider.
They're both Tomb Raiders.
He's like, I know what you're into. I know what you like. I know you're in it for the adventure.
Raiding lots
you're,
of tombs.
You're a Tomb Raider. And he says it like it's this derogatory term. You're a Tomb Raider.
Like a Goonie.
Oh wait, my bad. I need to say it like he did in his. You're a Tomb Raider.
Lara.
Like it's almost like he was struggling not to sound Australian.
Yep, and there were
this whole movie.
Couple instances when it like came through when he would talk low. It's like he had to have that higher register. In his voice to sound American, which I find offensive.
Did you find that this movie decided to go the long way around when it came to just like fucking people talking to each other instead of just being straightforward? But then like when it came to the raiding tombs part, they were just kind of fucking in and out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
It's a lot of shooting and a lot of let's get to the next action sequence. Mm-hmm. But we're going to take our sweet time with telephone conversation.
But that's the fucking problem. There were no action sequences, at least... Not the kind of action sequences I wanted to see.
Well, yeah.
I mean, what we got as far as action, we got her fighting a robot, and then she decided to do, like, bungee aerobics in her mansion.
That's great, too. Like, she's getting ready for bed. She's in her PJs, her little nighty.
She's only got the top button buttoned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did enjoy that. I'm not mad at that.
I'm sure you did.
I'm just saying. Well, because the 13 inside of me was squealing.
Uh-huh.
Little 13-year-old Joel Bernson.
Oh, my God.
Enjoyed it.
All right. So, yeah, she's doing these bungee aerobics, you were saying?
At, like, 9 p.m. at night. Like this is her cool down, I guess, before you go to bed every night? Mm-hmm. And that's her
Well,
routine.
Joel, when you wake up every morning eating robots for breakfast...
That's true.
You know, you've got to bungee jump.
Got to stay limber.
In your fucking parlor, in your home.
Well, it's convenient she was in that contraption because it sure came in handy 90 seconds later when the fucking commandos came in through the windows.
Mm-hmm.
Also wearing bungees.
A little bit of an ill-conceived action sequence, maybe?
We may have some disagreements on this movie because that was the only thing that was tying all these threads together for me. These
was the bungee fight?
The entire movie, and rightfully so, if you're going to make a video game movie, make it play like a video game.
Yeah.
You know, play to your audience. And I should mention that this movie did exactly that. This was a huge success. It was until, I think, the Prince of Persia movie that came out a couple years ago. This was the highest grossing movie that was based on a video game. It made $115 million. It was made for $115 million. Made $275 million. So more than doubled what they spent on it. So, you know, if you're going to do that, know your audience. And there are three or four sequences, that one included in this movie, that totally play out like a video game action sequence.
Yeah,
and I'm all about it.
Yeah, the fight in the garage where Bryce is kind of steering her around like, you know, as if he's the player.
Yep, you know? It's like a first-person shooter sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the person who I thought did the best job acting in this movie.
No.
The Bryce character?
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah,
We always kind of root for the underdog sidekicks, don't we?
For the nerd.
The nerdy guys.
Yeah, well, I think...
That says more about us,
But I honestly I honestly feel like he did the best job. It was the most genuine bit of acting in this movie, and it was from this dude.
How much would it blow your mind if you found out, like, he was actually... He had an American accent and was doing that British accent?
It would blow my mind. It would blow my mind quite a bit. Are you about to lay it down on me that he's an American?
No, he's actually the son of Mr. Bean. I'm just saying.
thanks for setting that up.
Couldn't be more British, but I'm just saying he's that good of an actor. You don't know. I could have told you that, and you would have believed it.
So you dug that fight sequence. You thought that tied everything together.
Other than
basically the bad guys getting the clock.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed some of the moves that she did. It was kind of Spider-Man-esque. She would be up in the corner, and then she'd swoop around, and I don't know. Listen, I'm easily entertained. And by the way, what did you say? This comes in like 20 minutes into the movie, so at this point, I'm dying for some action, anything that isn't dialogue-driven.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, this comes in about 20 minutes. This is after Daniel Craig calls him Tomb Raider. Yeah, it's about 20 minutes in. And then,
yes,
we still haven't gotten to a tomb. It's after this fight takes place and the bad guys take the clock.
Yep.
She gets a delivery from UPS.
Convenient.
And the dude drops off an envelope that's from her father.
Or from Dr. Emmett Brown.
About to say, she fucking... It gets back to
Laura,
the future.
To fucking... There's something about your kids, Laura.
You've got to find the triangle of time. So it's this letter, and it's like, if you're reading this, then I am gone. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, we could not have discovered this stuff. Like, Laura does not discover anything for herself in this movie.
Laid at her
feet.
For
being an archaeological, like, expert and a tomb raider, she fucking has everything handed to her on a silver fucking platter. Literally, handed to her on a silver platter. And then it's like a quote from, you know, from some book. I can't remember who it was. And then we get the second most important archaeological discovery in this movie that takes place in her library.
Yeah. This whole house is just full of surprises.
I mean, why the fuck even leave the house? Yeah. We could have just... It could have been House 4.
House Raider.
This would have been...
Laura Croft.
Coming to HGN.
Pantry Raider.
House Raider.
Oh, that does sound like... I would watch that.
Yes. And so she finds, like, it's this symbol, the triangle, the symbol of the Illuminati. She finds that in a book.
Yeah.
And then she opens it up, and there's like another fucking note from
her
father in it.
She cracks it open, doesn't she, with a hammer? She doesn't open it up.
No, that was the clock.
She
fucking hammers it. She
breaks everything. She
breaks the fuck out of everything. Lara Croft is a walking fucking calamity. You're right. When you said earlier, Matt, that like,
she just wrecks the shit
and doesn't fucking, you know, like in the beginning of Jurassic Park where they're like unbrushing dinosaurs and stuff very carefully.
She just
like with a hammer.
The Kool-Aid man.
Fucking just, oh yeah.
Found the bone. Laura Croft, shit wrecker. It's the sequel.
So yeah, she finds this note from her father that like gives her another fucking clue as to what it is that she's looking for. And then magically that leads us 45 minutes into the movie. We're 46 minutes into the movie. We are finally in a tomb by accident.
She accidentally
falls into a fucking tomb.
Hey, listen, she got there. Don't disparage.
Are you kidding me?
I can't apologize.
Because she was picking flowers. Because she's having these Jim Morrison-style like hallucinations
what the hell?
Of a little girl that's like talking to her about her dad. And like, oh, look over there. There's flowers. Dude, I couldn't even begin to tell you. Because that goes on throughout the whole fucking movie.
It does. It happens 3 or 4 times. And every time, she doesn't really seem fazed by it.
No.
In fact, I would say most of the characters aren't fazed by...
By anything.
The supernatural
They're
happenings. There's fucking time traveling going on. Everybody
Thank
takes
you.
It in a stride.
Thank you. No. Because that leads me to my next fucking note. They're in this tomb.
You're worked up today,
and they
Jeff.
Uncovered... Oh, dude. Oh, dude. You have no fucking idea.
It's fantastic.
They uncover this tomb. They finally find out where the first half of the triangle is. Mm-hmm. And they crack open this fucking vat of, like, the Joker's Smilex gas is
yes.
in this fucking... This Buddha. And they crash it open. And... All of a sudden, this black goo goes into all these, like, terracotta knights or whatever.
Horrible effects, too,
and
by the way.
They all come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And not one fucking person is like, holy fucking shit, those fucking terracotta knights just came to life. They've got spears. They're fucking attacking us.
There should be guys crying, like calling for their fucking mommies. Ripping
their own eyes out because exactly. They can't understand.
Praying to God, Jesus save me. I'm sorry for all my sins.
And everyone's just super cool with their guns. Like, bang, bang, bang. Hey, get those guys that came to life that are made out of rock.
It's like, what?
Well, day in the life.
of a Tomb Raider. Yes.
No, you're absolutely right. And those rock monsters, really, for being as supernatural as they are, they're fucking pushovers, man. A couple bullets to the head and they just crumble.
Well, it's terracotta. I mean, you know.
They weren't fully baked.
They weren't like marble knights.
That would have been, yeah.
Yeah, terracotta.
Titanium knights, maybe. Maybe that's why the Mayans never made it.
Because they didn't have titanium?
They should have, they should have been building their mythical creatures out of a sterner substance.
Yeah. No, I guess I agree with you on that.
It's hard to disagree, Joe, with that kind of logic.
But, like, they didn't explain anything, like, why those things came to life. They didn't explain what that goo was.
Yeah.
They didn't explain, you know. Like, at no point was anyone, like, after the fact, like, I don't know if you remember this, when she, like, finally fights her way, she fights this huge giant thing that comes to life.
Yeah, multi-armed kind of.
Yeah. And then, like, starts running, and she's got, like, this little cat version of one, like, following after her. She runs out of the fucking tomb, and we cut to, like, all the bad guys sitting around.
Yep.
They're just fucking sitting around. At least cut a little bit earlier and, like, to one of the dudes going, what the fuck was that?
Exactly, yeah.
Dude, I don't know. Those fucking rocks came to life.
I quit. This is my resignation.
Instead, they're just chilling by the fire, just chilling out, waiting. He's on his, Ian Glenn's on his pillows, just, like, relaxing.
Getting a massage.
And she comes running out and, like, sees them and starts hauling it the other way. That's just the first example of, like, this really weird, like, supernatural shit going on that nobody cares about, nobody acknowledges.
I guess right off the bat, they're already talking about time travel in their search for the golden triangle.
Motherfucker, if you were watching fucking Back to the Future,
yeah,
and Marty goes back to 1955,
right,
and some fucking mannequins at Sears come to life and start attacking him, wouldn't you be like, the fuck is that all about?
People might have noticed.
Yeah.
Turn some heads.
So just because time travel's involved, don't start with like the, you know.
I'm just saying these people are unfazed by anything. If time travel is on the table, then so are rock monsters.
And
that
these
will kill
people
you.
Meaning the fucking writers of this movie.
Yes. That's Simon West. You show respect.
I find it hard to believe. Well, he did adapt it. I find it hard to believe that even, like, nobody on the set, no actors. Like, I'm trying to imagine Daniel Craig, like James Bond as we know him now, who was in both one of the best Bond movies and one of the worst Bond movies I've ever seen.
I'm going to need some clarification.
Casino Royale. I thought his Casino Royale was one of
fantastic.
The best. Fantastic. It was one of the best Bond movies.
What's the worst?
I thought Skyfall was one of the worst Bond movies. Dude,
like Quantum of Solace over Skyfall?
Okay, whoa. I didn't say that.
I didn't say shit about Quantum of Solace.
I'm just saying. Let's put Skyfall in the middle.
No. I'm going to give you this. Quantum of Solace at least continued the story of Casino Royale. There was still a link that linked those two together.
It's a weak link.
Quantum of Solace felt like Casino Royale 1.5.
Yeah.
So
it was downloadable content.
Dude,
it's a DLC.
Skyfall ended like it was fucking Home Alone. They ended a Bond movie like it was fucking Home Alone, where they go into fucking the Skyfall mansion.
We're not going to be able to have
this conversation. And they've got like marbles in a fucking bag, and like he's made like makeshift traps, and he's got Albert Finney backing him up. Fucking yay, Albert fucking Finney. Don't start with me about this fucking Bond shit.
You've got my wheels turning now. I'm picturing like a YouTube mashup where we get
of Kevin Arnold,
Daniel Stern, and like James Bond.
Daniel Stern versus Daniel Craig.
The Wet Bandits, the Sticky Bandits, whatever they called themselves.
I can't remember what it
was. The Wet Bandits.
Thank you.
Was it the Wet Bandits?
Yeah.
Part two was the Sticky Bandits.
Yeah. That's right.
Jesus.
No, you're Home Alone, dude.
No, dude, I won't, because that movie's a pile of shit.
Oh, my God! All right, there are too many disagreements happening right now. We better get back to Tomb Raider.
Okay, so no, but what I was saying was you would think someone like Daniel Craig would go, excuse me, mate.
Wouldn't my character.
So the rock soldiers come to life. the rock soldiers are going to come to life. All right, so does anyone have a bit of dialogue where they go, blimey, those rock creatures are coming to life. No. You guys are just going to roll with it.
Right.
We're just going to roll with it. I'm sorry, mate. That just doesn't feel right. And I feel like somebody should have spoken up. Someone in production, like watching the dailies. All right. So those rock guys come to life.
That was page 26. Now we're on page 27, like, and everyone's back to normal.
There's some dude in the suit who's like, and then the rock monsters come to life and they attack everybody. It's fucking gold. Show her tits. Just show her tits.
You're wasting time. They may have had that in there after I got out of focus groups. They're like, sorry, that's really increasing the time between tit shots. We're going to have to cut the dialogue on that. Roll the rock monsters. Boom!
But we explain what happened with the rocks. I know, but it takes too much time away from the tits. Show me some more tits.
It's a picture.
And so she does get away with that piece of triangle and then ends up in like the Forbidden City where she drinks healing tea.
Yeah, that's right. And all of her scars are, it's like...
Have I gone past anything that you wanted to touch on yet?
No, not at all. Although I will mention, you're at the part of the movie now where I was really starting to appreciate... Did they actually go to these locations? I guess with $115 million
they went
budget.
They went to a bunch of locations.
You would hope that they went out a little bit.
I don't know. I mean, I just saw Eurotrip. You ever seen that movie?
Yes.
The fucking movie is called Eurotrip. They shot it all in L.A. There's no Europe in there. Everything's shot on a back lot. No. There's some horrible green screen. Hey, look, Parliament, Big Ben. And it's just like a matte painting. It was ridiculous.
It's like,
don't fucking call your movie Eurotrip.
Like European Vacation.
Yeah, exactly. Or, well,
the kids.
Call it Vegas Trip if you can't afford to go to Europe. Call it German. Go to one country.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry.
They go to a lot of countries in this movie. You wouldn't know because they spend a lot of time in her fucking mansion. But they go to a lot of countries. So after she escapes, her first order of business is to call Ian Glenn on a Tibetan satellite phone.
Yeah, how does she know the number, by the way?
I have no idea.
When did
idea.
They exchange information?
You know what, though? I think he did give her his number when he met her the first time.
Yeah? Does that work in India on a fucking satellite phone?
Dude, I don't know, man. Terracotta Knights come to life.
What happened
to so I don't know. Wait a minute.
I'm thinking,
so you're willing to suspend disbelief for the Terracotta Knights.
I'm just saying.
But not for the phone number.
If the Illuminati has been around for 500 years or however.
Maybe she called 1-800-Illuminati.
You'd think they'd know how to use burner phones. Yeah. I've seen enough episodes of, what's the one in Miami?
The Wire?
Shit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where, like, you pick up the $20 Nokia, make a couple calls, and then you throw it in a trash can in scene 3.
I just don't know if they had a lot of throwaway phones in the Forbidden City. There weren't a lot of burner phones.
It's a salient point.
I think they had one phone in the whole city. That's where she calls him up and they set up their whole good, the bad, and the ugly bit.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you've got the triangle, I've got the clock. Let's pull our resources and we can find the final piece.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, the whole point, what I'm feeling like the whole point of this movie was like, didn't her father say, like, you have to keep this from happening?
Yeah.
So, like, she's got half of the triangle.
Right. She could just lay low.
Why don't she just go to fucking Cabo for like a week? And then they have to wait 5,000 years. There's nothing anybody can do about it.
She is very complicit. And like there's that scene and then another point later on, or maybe it's earlier, where the bad guy makes a proposition and she's like, all right.
Yeah.
I know there's danger. It's probably not going to end well for me. And they're probably setting me up for a trap. There's no plan B. She's just like, I'm going to go along and I'll shoot my way out of it.
Right. No, that's...
Yeah, may as well. I'm a Tomb Raider. What are you going to do?
It's on the business card. I went to Tomb Raider High. I have a degree in Tomb Raider.
That would be a much more interesting
Tomb Raider
thing.
High?
Tomb Raider High. Like just the story of Lara Croft as a high schooler.
The Saturday morning cartoon version of Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Lil Raiders.
Lil Raiders. That's fantastic.
So they set up this thing, and now that's exactly what you were talking about, that she shows up at this dude's like hangar where the rest of the Illuminati has like gathered, and she's decided to do this thing.
Yeah.
And she just comes in and just throws her half of the triangle in a box held by them.
No backup
plan. They could have just been like... And just takes
exactly. That happens later on in the movie, too. Indiana Jones would have at least had John Rhys Davies poised up behind a rock somewhere, with his sights.
Here's the thing. And it's funny because... We talked about Indiana Jones. It's hard not to compare this to Indiana Jones because they share some traits. It's a derivative of it. But Indiana Jones at his best is a less effective hero than Lara Croft is.
We've had this
but still makes a better hero in the films.
Yeah. He uses his smarts at least.
Yeah, but I feel like one of the tried and true formulas for a movie like this is that the person that our protagonist is fighting against doesn't have the proper respect for the power they're trying to wield.
That's right.
So what you want to get from that is our hero is trying to affect change, but then we also see that the villain kind of defeats themselves because they can't respect that power.
That moral compass.
Just like in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yep.
If Indiana Jones wasn't involved, the Nazis would have found the Ark, opened it, and all died quicker.
Yeah.
And in Last Crusade, they would have gotten to where the Grail was.
Yeah.
They would have taken it over the seal and all got buried in that thing quicker.
Well, we wouldn't have learned something along the way then.
Right, exactly. That's the only thing. You know, where Indiana Jones is an effective hero, those are the movies people don't quite like as much.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's happening here, where they're trying to make Lara Croft far too effective of a hero, that she's always the smartest person in the room.
She's way too overconfident in her abilities.
Far too overconfident. And she's infallible. They made her kind of infallible,
yeah,
where she's never wrong about something.
Well, she owns her own robot that she kills on a daily basis.
Right.
So that'll do wonders for your self-esteem.
So that's
a morale booster.
That makes sense. So we're an hour and 15 minutes into this movie.
Uh-huh.
We finally get to the second tomb.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it has like
they didn't even save it for the sequel, Joe.
No.
Aren't you impressed?
Yeah.
We're already at Tomb Raider 2.
You know, I was actually scared watching this movie again. I couldn't remember what happened in it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're like, okay, you've got the first triangle. Now what? You know, and I was like, oh, shit. Are they setting this up to be like a series of movies? Is that what the second one was finding the second triangle? Or will this get – because I'm watching. She gets that first piece of the triangle, and there's only like – 50 minutes left in the movie.
Yep. Lord of the Triangle. Fellowship of the Triangle.
The Desolation of John Voight.
The Desolation of West. I couldn't remember the other guy's name.
Twin titties.
Again, with the 9/11 references.
Okay, so an hour and 50 minutes in, we're in the second tomb. And first off, we've got another case of the supernatural,
mm-hmm,
and that nobody fucking reacts to. Like, there's these little things floating around, these beams of light or
what
whatever.
What did she call them?
Time storms.
Time storms.
They're time storms, Joel.
Oh.
And dogs.
Oh, sorry.
Dogs who usually, like, will warn and, like, avoid phenomena like
yes,
that.
Yes, I love this.
Run and jump right the fuck into it.
Yeah.
And we see them, like, get disassembled and then reassembled in, like, into real
life.
It's
like that scene from The Cell where, like, they dissect the horse.
Yeah.
In what's-his-name's mind.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so that's what we see happen to the dog.
Well, maybe that dog was, like, a circus dog and he used to jump through hoops and he was just having a flashback.
That could be it. I like that you're making excuses for the horrible fucking decisions
just
made
just trying
in this movie
to be the yang to your yang.
So the dog runs through it and, like, and Daniel Craig is... What the hell's that?
Yeah.
And she's, it's a
Again, cut. That's not in the script. Right. So you're just supposed to accept this as reality.
It. And so she explains, she goes, oh, it's a time storm. How the fuck does she know what that is?
Tomb Raider school.
How does she, like, we don't see her. Again, this is another case of her not gaining that knowledge at all.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's not even about her gaining that knowledge. You have to acclimate the viewer. We have to know, like, oh, the times, that's that thing that she was talking about earlier. Maybe
yes,
that's something that they reference. Maybe in some, like, a prophecy. Maybe she read a book and it's, you know, beware the cave where time splits too.
Right.
You know, some shit like that,
yeah,
where it comes through. Oh, like in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where it's, you know, he who steps in the footsteps of God.
The penitent man will pass.
Shit like that, where you go, oh, okay, this is really smart. The way they laid it out, I'm kind of following along what's going on. Instead of just, oh, they're time storms. They fly around in the cave.
Oh, okay. Thanks
and
for filling
like,
in that plot
oh,
point.
Okay, cool. Time storms. Hey, remember last week? Oh, my God, those fucking time storms. That was really weird when we were in that cave. Where all the terracotta knights came to life. So we see these time storms.
Mm-hmm. Be the best weatherman job, by the way, to be the forecaster of time storms.
Time storm. Oh, a lot of time storms moving in this weekend.
Look out.
Gonna have some,
find yourself in the 50s.
Some moisture coming up this weekend, and then by Monday, some time storms going to be blowing off into the East Coast.
By Monday, it'll be Sunday again, because time storms are going to be blowing through in reverse time.
All right, so... That's when they find that, like, the big planetarium thing, like, from the dark. You ever seen the movie The Dark Crystal?
Yes.
Where they go into that chick's, like, that big home, and it's got, like, all the planets, mm-hmm, and the constellations.
It's a nice
and stuff.
Set piece. They spent a lot of money on that.
Yeah. So Daniel Craig and Lara Croft just decide to fucking, we're going to climb it.
Yeah.
It looks like the thing from, like, Percy Jackson, too. They just start climbing this thing.
I don't get that reference. Now, Joe, you played the video game.
Uh-huh,
was that an action set piece in the video game? Because it seems straight out.
I'm going to tell you, that was not. Neither was the part where Lara Croft starts bungee fighting a bunch of fucking Black Ops guys in her living room.
My two favorite scenes, basically, is what you're saying.
Neither of those are, from what I remember, in the Lara Croft Tomb Raider game. What is in the Tomb Raider game, mm-hmm, is her fighting, like I said, wolves and bears and fucking T-Rexes. Or not, I think, raptors. Like velociraptors.
Oh, that's right.
She's like fighting those. I would have fucking accepted that.
Well,
if you're talking about time storms,
I was gonna say,
and like, you know, ooh, it's time's out of whack.
Yeah.
All right, I'm okay if you build a story like that. Give me the building blocks early so I can be like, oh, okay, we're going to a place, you know, the land of the lost, where time's askew. fucking velociraptors are coming out of little time storms. Ah, you know,
I bet there's some tombs there that could use raiding.
Oh, yeah.
Where velociraptors are from.
And that's the movie I wish we could have fucking watched. So instead, you know, they're climbing up this giant fucking Christmas tree.
Yeah. This look like
this,
ornaments.
This mobile, like I'm almost expecting there to be like a giant fucking baby laying under
it. It's like the baby from Teletubbies is the sun.
And so Daniel Craig's like, I bet you the piece is in the sun. And they start like they start climbing up, and she sees something like where the key goes. She says, give me the clock. Give me the clock. He gives it to her. She finds the place where it goes, and she just fucking beams into it.
Yeah. Gets sucked in.
Uh huh. And the only person who reacts to it naturally is Daniel Craig.
Once again.
He's like, Laura.
Going off script.
Like, where the fuck did you go? Laura, where'd you go? Everybody else is, huh. I hope she gets the piece.
That might be why Simon West didn't invite Daniel Craig back for Tomb Raider 2. Way too much realistic acting.
He was too genuine.
Stop putting your own shit on this character, Daniel Craig. Fine, I'll go be James Bond.
And she doesn't, we don't witness her achieve gaining the piece.
Yeah,
she just beams into the thing and then beams out and she has it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She gets birthed out.
Yeah. And that's when Ian Glen takes the two pieces, tries to put it together.
Not working.
And it's not working. And then, like, he stabs?
Yeah, he throws a knife at
James
Bond. 007.
Yeah. And then that's when she's like, I'll show you what it is. And, like, takes the clock that her father left her and throws it into a time storm thing.
Yeah. Oh, she knew this was going to happen.
How the fuck did she know this was going to happen?
She's so confident in her. Yeah, that could have gone horribly wrong and ruined everything.
Well, it could have gone horribly wrong. Don't you think? And I know I sound like a fucking broken record here. Don't you think that's the kind of thing that, like, it would have worked had they built it up ahead of time?
Yeah.
Had we Chekhov gunned this thing just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and then, like, we see her throw that thing in the storm. And, you know, again, where we discover, along with Lara, what the hell's going on. Instead of Lara just kind of being this all-knowing entity and keeping everything from us, the viewer, like, we see her researching. Do a little fucking research.
Yeah, use your head, Lara, like, not just your tits.
Look frantically into a book for just a minute.
You know what? Even if they just, you know what? I'll compromise with you. Have her wear a low-cut fucking top and the camera up high while she's reading a book. That's fucking
now
fine.
You're talking. That's what get asses in seats.
Does she have to bend over to read the book?
Yeah, she does. She does have to bend over.
Slowly.
And sometimes we have a dynamic camera that'll go around.
Is she wearing a thong?
Yes.
No five panties. Wrong
five
answer.
Thongs.
No panties.
Eight thongs all over. She's got it. Her hands are made of thongs.
I'm crazy thong hands. How do I love you with these? A Tim Burton film.
No, so
Edward Thong Hands.
So instead of these dumb scenes where she's riding a fucking motorcycle and fighting dudes in her foyer. It would have been a little more interesting had we built this up, had we started this movie with some mission where she's getting, maybe, you know what? She's already trying to find the clock. Like, the clock is an artifact she's trying to find, and she's following her father's notes to find this thing. And she's maybe on expedition with a dude that knew her father, and so he's kind of giving some of the expository dialogue. Mm-hmm. She finds the thing, runs into this, oh, God, what the hell was this guy's name? Powell? Yeah, Powell.
Powell, yeah.
She comes
across
this Powell dude. And, you know, he kind of pulls a Belloc and tries to take it from her. Well, you know, she kind of outsmarts him or whatever. And maybe in the course of the story, she's doing a little bit more research, finds out about these time storms, the tomb where time splits in two. I'm really stuck on this thing.
You've written this script in your head.
And so, meanwhile, the clock gets stolen, but not before she kind of figures out where the next location is. And that leads us to the, you know, the next tomb location. And that's where maybe she gets... Maybe she gets betrayed by this dude that used to be her father's friend, and which they kind of did in this one, but didn't pay anything off.
And it didn't really. That was a weak B plot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't.
There was
go
no like
anywhere.
You know, throw him in the clock. I'll give you the book.
Yeah. So. No, it didn't go anywhere. Yeah. So, you know, maybe she gets that second piece, and then, you know, then maybe she's fooled that they're going to kill the friend of her father because she doesn't know he's the one that betrayed her. You know, something like that. And that's what leads them to the final tomb. So that way this whole thing is globetrotting. The last thing we should have to do in a Tomb Raider movie is hang out for 40 minutes in Laura's house.
Hey, man, she's a Tomb Raider. It's what she does. It's not who she is.
It's a lifestyle.
She doesn't take her work home.
It's not a choice. It's who she is. So instead we get this, you know, this whole thing about her throwing the clock in, and you find out there's like a sand of time
It's convenient.
Sand of Time in the fucking clock, and then she throws it in the triangle, somehow knew it was going to be there.
Yeah, we didn't
know.
Knew it
goes
into
the triangle. Yeah, and so that's what makes this thing work. And suddenly she and Ian Glen are transported back to, like, fucking ancient Mesopotamia or whatever.
And what the? And then they're just, like, running.
They're running relay races up to the top of a fucking pyramid.
Like, who saw that coming? Who even? I had no context as an audience as, right. like, where I am.
No,
what's happening?
No, I mean, maybe have, like, one of the, like, a spirit of the ancient Mesopotamia and be like,
go.
The first to reach the
exactly.
like
He's
explain what the fuck they're doing. Even that, just have a fucking starter pistol, bam, and then they start running, because that would have made more fucking sense than just.
I was watching it. I actually looked down and looked up and had to rewind because I thought I missed something.
Yeah,
like, how did they start running? Where the fuck are they?
And who knows to do that? How did they know? My first instinct would have been like, hey, look at that fucking thing. Why are you running? Wait, what's going on? And then I would have died.
Yeah, that happens. That is very anticlimactic too. That guy's. Fall
well, his
from
first
where
death,
the hell they are.
His,
yeah, yeah.
His first death.
Death of one of three.
One of three deaths
yeah,
that happens to this guy. So then, you know, she has this fucking weird scene with her father that we were talking about earlier.
All right, now we got to slow down because I'd like to talk about this scene. So John Voight, Angela Jolie's actual father in real life. And so if you don't know their history, do you guys know their history?
I don't know for sure what the history is. I just know they're estranged.
They're like, fuck off. Then now we're tight. Then fuck off again.
I know, but did it start when she was young, or did the fuck off come after she got famous?
I thought it was while she was young.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she's Cyborg 2.
So she was always in she was always in fuck off mode, and then at some point there was going to be kind of this. I guess she started having kids before she started buying kids and wanted to have her.
No, because Jeff told us that this was the movie that caused her to start doing her humanitarian efforts.
Okay, yeah, but didn't she have an actual kid? First or no?
No.
I don't think she had.
Has a human baby ever passed through her thighs?
I don't think so.
No, because, I had to make it all sexual that way. Didn't
yeah,
she was with her brother.
Oh, that's
with
true.
Bob Thornton.
That's true.
I think the brother thing may have led to some of the estrangement between her and her dad.
Okay, so either way, so this is like the rekindling, and here they are. They're finally going to star in a movie together. I'm still not convinced they shot that scene together.
Nope.
For one thing, they're standing on opposite sides of the screen. This could clearly have been like a split screen.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're going to fly Angelina in on Tuesday, and then John Voight will be here on Friday.
Yeah. Holy shit, she's in this? Oh, God.
Yeah. You know? And they're like, just lock down the camera and in a two-shot. Just lock it down.
And yet, the dialogue was so, like, close to home, what they're talking about, especially when he's delivering his lines. I felt like he was really talking to Angelina Jolie.
I think he was definitely trying
to... I'm sorry I wasn't there for you.
Yes. He was trying to make up for some sins of the past.
I think so.
But there was
she
also
was not
some,
having it.
There was also some really fucking horrible shit. That was some bad writing, too, at the same time.
Yeah.
Because she shows up, and she's like, where am I? Is this real? And he says something like, this is your past. But it's like your past, my future.
Yeah. She's in the Matrix.
I don't know what the fuck that means. But at one point, she's like, I missed you so much. And he says, I missed you too. But she went back into the past.
Yeah.
Like, that was her going back into the past and talking with him. So she's still a little kid, and he just, like, hung out with her. Like, they were just, he hasn't gone anywhere yet.
He hasn't missed her yet.
So, one, why is he being so cool about, like, hey, look, it's my daughter from the future? Like, again, another moment where someone should have been like, whoa, holy shit, you did it. Holy fuck, no, don't tell me anything. I'm going to go write some letters and make sure that you know where some of this shit is.
Exactly.
So that way we don't fuck this up. No, Dad, you already did. I did? All right, cool. And, you know, but she says stuff like, I've missed you. And he's, I missed you so much, too.
Yeah.
How?
I get the feeling
how
he's,
did you mi-
he's
how
been
did you
like
miss
in
her?
The Nexus
no,
like, for so long.
But how?
I don't get it either. I don't know.
Yeah, this from the director of Expendables 2.
And Stolen. Nick Cage is Stolen.
And Con Air.
Yeah, this film did have quite a few writers in the credits, I think. It went through a couple of series.
Yeah, there were two story writers.
Yep.
There were two script writers who've done a bunch of episodes of, like, The Blacklist.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty strong show.
Yep. And then Simon West
Simon
came
West
and crapped
put
all
his
over
fucking fingerprints all over the goddamn
changed
thing.
Character names.
So this isn't the end of the movie.
No.
Like, we're still not at the end yet. He tells her, like, no, we can't take time. You've got to destroy the triangle. You know, you can't keep it. All right. It's not fair, though. I know, bitch. It's not fair. You've got to go back and destroy
the triangle. You know what's not fair? Not being able to see my grandkids.
You know what's not fair?
Angelina.
Having to shoot this scene with someone
Laura.
With fucking Jar Jar Binks and wait for them to fucking superimpose you over.
That would be awesome if he was acting against Ahmed Best.
And so she goes back into, like, the past. She's able to rewind it back into the past as Ian Glen is throwing the knife at Daniel Craig.
Mm-hmm.
She manages to manipulate the fucking time stream and turn the fucking knife around.
Okay. So she turns it around, but it's still in midair. He has tossed it forward. Trajectory is behind this knife. Yes. It is still moving towards Daniel Craig. How does the act of freezing it in time, turning it around? I thought they were like, she was going to unfreeze time, and then it would hit him, but it would be the butt end, and then there'd be like a kick-ass sequence. Yeah. No, it goes fucking flying towards the guy who threw it.
Yeah,
it goes
like fucking boomerang.
That's not how physics works.
Wait, though. Have you stopped time and turned items around as they were in mid-flight?
Well, we had that time storm blow through here a couple of weeks ago. I experimented with some chopsticks in my living room, but no, Joe, I haven't. Or you pulled it out of me.
It doesn't happen often. Usually you like to keep it in.
Hey-o.
Oh, that was horrible. I'm sorry.
Jeff, cut that part out. Cut that part out.
That was so bad. All right, so...
What are you going to do in the live show when we can't cut shit out?
I thought she was... Dude, we don't cut shit out at all.
Of course we don't.
Except for that variance episode.
And edit.
Okay, so what I thought she was going to do is I thought she was going to, like, pick up the dude. So, like,
oh,
he was going to be in the path of the knife instead.
That would have been a five-minute sequence of her, like, dragging his carcass across. Neither one worked. I like that idea better because at least physics would have been on their side.
Better pull Daniel Craig out of the way.
Hey, something easier. There you go.
That would have been
instead
much
of like
easier.
Slicing your palm open trying to flip this knife around.
Or why couldn't she just hold the handle of the knife, shoot the triangle, and it doesn't go anywhere?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's the easiest one.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, yeah, she manages to turn the knife around, and like we see like the reaction shot as the knife comes back, and he's like, oh no. And it stabs him. He falls to the ground. He's stabbed in the fucking heart.
Mm-hmm.
Movie's still not done.
Oh no.
Now we decide to develop the villain further.
Now that he's got a knife sticking out of his...
Like, we seriously... Like, they decide to stop down and start developing this villain giving him a little bit more history, where now he's got the locket of Lara Croft's mother that, like, her father used to carry around.
No, Simba.
Talks about...
Killed Mufasa.
I killed your father, and he begged and cried. And then we see a shot of it, and he's like, surrender. No.
Never.
Bang. Done. Okay.
Your definition of begging and crying for his life.
Why are we
open
seeing
to interpretation.
This? Why are we seeing this? And so then he's like, you know, no, you've got to face me. Wait, you've got a knife in your heart.
Yeah.
And he's still like, he's getting up. And Daniel Craig's like, bitch, this place is falling down around us. Let's get the fuck out of here. No, I've got to do this. No, Lara, we should. I'll be there. All right. Just All hurry right. up.
Yeah.
Something like that. And they take off. And then Lara showed, you know, she comes walking up to Ian Glenn. They both get, you know, he gets up and they're both, you know, pointing pistols
She's
at each other.
She's got two
face.
Guns on him. He's got one
he's got
on
one.
Her. Anybody could have pulled the trigger and ended it.
And he says, no guns.
Not like this.
No guns. They put the guns down and start fighting fisticuffs while the place is falling apart around them.
Yeah, he's bleeding out through an aorta.
Meanwhile, she's not focusing on that section
of
his body.
That's right.
You know, just focus on that. Just keep hitting that over and over
Sweep
and over.
Sweep the leg,
again.
Johnny.
But he's focusing on that section of her body.
That's a good point. That's why he lost. See, the tits prevail.
Oh, my God.
As they always do.
And so we end up having this fight, which... no time storms floating around while the fight's going on. How much more visually interesting would that have been?
You know how
had
expensive
been,
that would have been,
had they been
Joe?
Fighting and like maybe like weaving in and out of time storms?
Dude, we're $115 million into this budget. We've flown to three different continents, an entire crew.
So you're going
to
waste a time storm on a dog fucking jumping through it?
Hey, that was pretty cool. We could use it for the commercial,
oh
for the trailer.
God.
That's all you need is that one money shot.
It would have made it a little bit more visually interesting.
I agree.
But
I started punching you 100 years ago.
Yes.
Oh, you know, it could have played out like the last... Joe's lost it. That's fantastic. It could have played out like the last scene of Monsters, Inc., where they're going through all the doors.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine them like fighting through
and
time?
Like, yeah, and like she's fighting through time. Maybe they go
T-Rex
through this time
in the
storm
background.
And they come. Yes!
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you now for seeing my side of this thing.
Oh, I've always been on your side, Joe.
Aww.
I'm right
You're
here.
You're like Nationwide. soon to be a sponsor of the Editing Bay podcast.
Don't sing the jingle. We'll get sued.
So, you know what? Spoiler alert. She defeats this dude.
What?
Uh-huh. Yeah, she manages to win this fight and then starts making her way out of this cave that's falling apart.
Uh-oh.
Thank God some dick left a bunch of dogs to die in the
cave.
Yeah,
asshole. Thanks, Daniel Craig.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, James Bond.
These fucking dogs are hanging out. It's like, why don't somebody take these fucking dogs?
Yeah.
You know, oh, she might need them. Yeah, or these dogs might fucking die. Maybe take the dogs.
Well, the sled that they were attached to had been crushed, so they were
so
useless
to them.
So
she was able to, like, ski on her feet. This
awesome.
Is what I like to call the, this is Tomb Raider's kick-ass jetpack scene.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this was, because it was unnecessary. You could have just had a shot of, like, the cave falling down, she makes her way out, bam, fade to the next scene.
It's a video game, and this is another one of those video games. This was the Mario Kart sequence of Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
We didn't need it. She just went through time, and she fought a dude that she stabbed in the chest. Like, all this stuff that happened, video game enough. I think we saw your video game approach. It was pretty fucking weak, but we got all your little levels. We got your terracotta knight level. We got your
The bungee.
The relay races up the top of a fucking pyramid level. Mm-hmm. We don't need any more levels.
You beat final boss.
Yes,
move on.
Exactly. Beat the final boss. You beat Gideon Graves.
Scotty reference.
Yes. So she's she's sledding on her feet, and then we still get to see the movie. Still isn't over.
No.
Because
Jeff tossing his hands in the air, exasperated.
We have to see this movie, this film, that she goes to her father's grave, mm-hmm. and then like there's a butterfly flying behind her as she goes into the house. She's wearing a cotton dress. It shocks everybody. Mm-hmm. And like Bryce shows up. He's like, guess what? Fucking robot's fixed. Yep. The robot shows up and the butler's like, ooh, I've got your guns on a silver platter. She grabs the guns, turns around, freeze frame, end of movie.
Pose. Yeah, like a 1970s, like a...
like an episode of Starsky and
Sundance
fucking Hutch.
Kid. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was so... I was exhausted by the time this movie was over.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that I dedicated an hour and 45 minutes
to this. I'll be honest. I double-timed. You know how you can do double time on Netflix?
Did you really?
I double-timed through that last fight sequence because I was done with it. I was right there with you, man. I was like, all right, I don't need to hear this. I can see sound.
So ready for this thing to be done. Yeah. So is there anything in all that, was there anything that you guys didn't bring up that you wanted to talk about?
You know, I like the idea that we can see planets with our naked eyes all of a sudden. These planets are going to align and they're so close to the Earth, we don't need fucking telescopes. Like, we're all throughout the movie, we're being reminded, the fucking planets are going to align 5,000 years, blah, blah, blah. We do these cutaway shots where we're like literally in space seeing the planets about to align.
Yes.
And at the end, you know, we're seeing sequences, and I know it's to remind the dumb audience that there's a time limit on this thing, and we're racing against the clock, literally and figuratively. But, like, you cannot see planets with your naked eye. They don't look like glowing orbs in the sky, even if they're going to align. I'm sorry.
No.
Your horoscope is wrong.
No, the only time that it makes sense is when she's looking through her high-powered telescope.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Matt, did you have anything else that you wanted to
aside from
up?
That, I had no other problems with the film.
Boobs, boobs, boobs.
He's like, as long as there were breasts, I was okay with it.
Look, you know, this is like the swollen Angelina Jolie role. Even the opening, the lips, the boobs, the ass, the everything.
It's so true.
I had no idea what Lara Croft was.
Oh, you're kidding.
I'd never played the video game.
Ah.
I saw the movie just because I'd seen so many girls going as Lara Croft for Halloween.
Ooh, a little cosplay. Thank God.
Yeah. There's been a lot of good ones since then. Now we come to the moment, you know, we have things that we usually do, Matt, on the podcast. First, you know, Joel and I will talk about what did the movie did right, or what did the movie did, whatever. Joel, what did
What's
the
opposite of right?
Cut that part out,
What
too,
did the movie do right?
I'm telling you, man, I love Angelina Jolie in this role. I bought the accent for the most part. I know, and maybe it's because I knew she was doing an accent and was impressed by how authentic it sounded to me. All right, whatever. Even if you're not down with that, I liked her subtleties. Yes, she's as dumb as a bricks. Yes, she's padded her bra to 34 double D or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. She was the glue that held the rest of this piece of mess together.
Mm-hmm.
Disagreed. Man, she looked hot.
Okay. Matt, what did you think this movie did the best?
I thought it had a couple. Well, Joel, I thought it had a couple of cool action sequences.
Yeah.
The bungee thing wasn't that bad,
right?
You know. The way they played it out, like I said, the way they played it out as it's a video game, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of could respect that. You know, I know you're sifting through shit, you know, trying to find the corn. But, you know.
you're being Dr. Ellie Sadler, just like trying to dig through
like,
find something.
All right, what is it?
That is one big pile of shit.
Shit. Yeah. She's tenacious. I feel like the movie, the cinematography on the movie was pretty well done.
Yes.
It looked really good.
The locations, uh-huh. right?
The oh locations. They shot the locations really well. That's about as much as I can give this movie.
All right.
I thought it looked good. What did it do wrong, Joel?
Just what you say. Just if you're gonna have this many supernatural things going, you've got rock monsters, you've got, you know, like dogs chasing you, you've got time storms. Mm-hmm. At least have somebody show. You need some character who's playing the part of the audience, who the audience can relate to and see the movie through that person's eyes. Uh-huh. And I thought for a while it was going to be, who's it, Bryce?
I thought he
was going to be along, and he would be the one with wonderment, oh my goodness, and just kind of freaking out as that sidekick, and right. she would be able to play the straight man.
Laura, that's a time storm.
But he's never there, yeah. No, or, yeah, just him show some awe.
Right.
But again, the fact that everybody is nonplussed, or whatever the opposite of that is, plussed, by... the supernatural happenings around them.
Mm-hmm.
That always bugs me in all these movies. Oh, and one more pet peeve of mine, and this is for me alone, but slow-mo, several times in this movie, and I noticed this is a Simon West thing because he fucking did it in Stolen, and I think maybe even Con Air.
He's done it in Con Air, yeah.
When you take a film that was shot at 24 frames a second, Matt's fucking looking at me like I'm a fucking crazy film nerd, and I am, because this is a pet peeve that nobody else cares about, but when you take film and then slow it down,
uh-huh.
like if you want to show something in slow-mo,
you've got to shoot it
fucking
at a
over-crank
faster,
it.
At a higher rate.
It at 60 frames a second so that when you project it at 24, it's a smooth motion. It's not that kind of strobe slow-mo.
Uh-huh.
And it always smacks of... We didn't think this was going to be a slow-mo shot until we got it in post.
Right.
So now we have to do the fake Final Cut effect on it to make it go slow-mo.
Uh-huh.
And I it's unforgivable.
Which they did a lot in the bungee fight.
Yeah, they did.
They did that a lot.
And then they do
the
it for dramatic effect
fight.
At the end when time is slowing down.
They sure did.
Ironically, time is slowing down. You'd think you'd want to overcrank some of these shots to show them. Anyway.
But they didn't.
But that's just me.
Because they're morons.
Aside from that, I have no complaints.
The movie do wrong?
Looking back on the movie, like, okay, I said the fight sequences... We're fairly good, but if you look back around the time, they really didn't stand out.
That's right, because we had the first Matrix by this point.
Yeah, 1999.
Yeah, the Matrix had come out,
before.
Crouching Tiger
had done with all
the cables, all the John Woo movies, you know, that's pretty much all they had to offer. but so as good as they were, they really kind of, you know, subpar for the time, you know, for at least for around that time whenever all the movies were kind of...
So doves.
So what we got out of this is... The movie, the best thing the movie did and the worst thing the movie did to Matt is the same exact thing.
They're one and the
same. I hate the most what I liked the most about this movie.
I hate myself for seeing this movie.
I do too.
What about you, Joe?
I thought that hinging this whole thing on a subpar actress like Angelina Jolie.
Oscar award winner.
What I resent the most about this movie is that when it was coming out and people were talking about it, it was creating this huge buzz of girl power and female empowerment.
Yeah.
A positive, you know, action star, female action star for women to get behind, and it's not. It's
not
a horrible, ineffective female heroine.
Yeah.
You know, it pisses me off because you do have strong female heroes. You've got your Buffy, and you've got your, you know, the chicks from the Firefly show. You know, you've got, I can't list them all.
too numerous.
But you've got
you're
positive
right.
female action influences, and they ignored these,
yeah.
and they gave you tits. They
yep.
gave you tits the movie. You know what, Lara Croft, even though you play Tomb Raider and one of the, you know, hey, she's got big boobs. You don't need to make that the defining characteristic of the character from
the
movie.
Because she wasn't smart.
No, she wasn't, because she didn't gain any knowledge for herself.
She didn't uncover anything.
But somehow she knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you cannot make a character that's so unbalanced that, like, she doesn't gain any knowledge for herself, but she also knows everything that's happening. But still can't protect a fucking clock in her own house. That's why she's so much smarter than the rest of them. Slowly fucking emptying itself out with the silicone.
I'd pay to see that, actually.
No, sir. No, I really honestly thought that she was the wrong choice. She was absolutely the wrong choice for Lara Croft, which brings me...
You've parlayed right into my favorite part of the show, Joe.
To where we recast the film and we find out who should have played these roles.
Well, you posited the question, so I'll ask you.
Okay.
Your answer. Who should have played Angelina Jolie's role?
The Lara Croft character, I was split between two people.
Okay.
There's an actress named Serinda Swan, who was in a movie or a TV show called Breakout Kings.
Fake name.
She was also... porn name. She was also one of the chicks in Tron Legacy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, do you see her?
I see her now.
Yeah, you got her brought up. Show Matt.
I sure do.
She's gorgeous. She's got that Lara Croft look to her.
Is she British?
No. She's American, so it would have fit. It would have still fit the whole chemistry of the movie.
There she is, toting a gun.
So
fuck yeah.
If not Serinda Swan, Rhona Mitra, I think would have been a good choice as well. Rhona Mitra's a little bit more well known. She's British. If you've ever seen the movie Doomsday,
yes,
yeah, she plays the main character in the movie Doomsday.
Oh, I love her too.
She's fantastic.
Oh yeah.
So that's who I would have picked to play Lara Croft. How about you, Joel?
Good point. I have to do a podcast here. I'm just checking out nudie pics of the actresses you just listed. Matt, do you have any? Not that I want to go last, but
I would have thought Mila Kunis.
Wow, an old favorite.
Are
here
you a listener,
on the editing
Matt?
Bay?
No, I'm not.
That's funny because like that's an old like the first like five episodes we were recasting
we
people.
Recast Mila Kunis
as Mila
everything.
Kunis. She was all, in every role.
We were like, how we recast Gremlins, Gizmo, Mila Kunis.
That's hilarious that you went there. But yes, I could totally see her doing that.
I can see her pulling it off. You know, you have to be somewhat athletic, and you know,
she played a character similar to that in that Max Payne movie.
That's true.
Where she's kind of a badass.
That's
chick
true.
With
yeah,
a gun.
Yeah. And the she was an evil witch in the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Or just
movie.
Meg with green skin.
Oh, my God. Oh, horribly miscast in that movie. We should do that one.
What do you have for Lara Croft?
My Lara Croft also goes with the father, John Voight character.
Uh-huh.
Because, as you pointed out, this isn't a role model for girls, for women.
Mm-hmm.
She uses her sexuality, basically, to get everything. She's not very bright, and she does stunts and is just, like, empowered by her bosoms. And I am also intrigued by the fact that they did the kind of father-daughter like casting in real life.
Uh-huh.
So I was starting thinking like, who are some famous father-daughter pairs? Mm-hmm. So I'm going with Miley Cyrus as Lara Croft Tomb Raider. Miley Cyrus
and Billy Ray.
And Billy Ray Cyrus shows up later on as dead John Voight in the time, and they have this touching scene where you know she's riding a hot dog or something, and he's telling her to behave.
And to ride it like a wrecking ball.
She's clearly like not afraid of her sexuality, and so you know you stuff her bra with some Kleenex.
It's nice to see that you took this seriously in recasting this.
Well, listen, I started going your route, but realized that none of the actresses' names that I think would actually fit, people would recognize.
Okay.
But people love some Miley Cyrus.
Matt,
so that's where I'm going.
Did you recast the father?
The father? I would have said Hugh Laurie.
Laurie's not bad. That's a good casting.
Love House, man.
That's more of a comedic slant on this for a movie that's going to be this ridiculous.
Well, very dry.
It's a good
you know,
point.
That would be nice to have that kind of a dry humor as you go into this movie. You know, some kind of a wit like that. It would have also, a wit like that also sells the supernatural
yes.
a little bit more. Where
yep, yeah.
you make that character skeptical of what's going on, it makes it okay for the audience to accept that it's happening.
Yeah.
For me, I went a little more serious with my casting on it. I went with Sean Bean.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's about that age.
He's
now,
about that
he?
Age. He's about that. My first thought was Michael Caine, and I'm like, he's too old. I got to go. I had to go. So I went Sean Bean. I thought Sean Bean was a good deal for that. So the.
Any other characters?
Ian Glenn, the Powell character. I've got Alex West recast, and I've got Bryce recast.
Well, let's start with the bad guy.
Okay. Ian Glenn, Powell. I went with Tom Hiddleston.
I know the name.
He plays Loki in the Thor
yes.
and Avengers movie.
Oh, he's fantastic. Oh, and he's already British?
Well, and you know what? There's one reason why I picked Tom Hiddleston. One thing that brought me to Tom Hiddleston. At one point, Ian Glenn like has this weird like long hair thing going on in the background, and the hair's kind of pulled back, and he almost kind of resembled Tom Hiddleston.
Looked like Loki.
And that's when I wrote it down. I was just like, okay.
Dude,
Tom
that's
Hiddleston
great. Oh, he's a great villain.
Did you recast that one?
I did. I'm going with Ewan McGregor, actually.
Oh.
You don't get to see him be a villain very often. In fact, mm-hmm. I can't think of a film where he ever plays the bad
guy. I can't remember.
But
one.
I bet you he would kick the ass out of it.
Uh-huh.
And again, he's already British.
Yeah. You got one, Matt?
I went with William Fichtner.
Oh, yes, the great William Fichtner. He played Butch in the Lone Ranger movie.
I love to hate that guy, man.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's so likable and hateable.
As soon as you see him, you're like, oh, I fucking hate you.
How would people know him if they don't know the name?
Well, like I said, he played Butch Cavendish in Lone Ranger.
Yeah, how else?
He also played, he was in Go.
He was in Heat.
Oh, yeah, the crazy Amway salesman in Go. I think most people know him, the opening sequence
of the Dark
Knight.
Where he's in the bank. He's like, you know, you guys are dead.
Yeah. Yeah,
And he was also one of the astronauts in Armageddon.
Oh, he was, wasn't he? Uh-huh. That's right. I love that guy. Great character actor.
The Daniel Craig character, Alex West. Mm-hmm. I went with a little bit of Game of Thrones action, Kit Harington.
And which character does he play?
He plays Jon Snow.
Okay, yes, okay. Ooh, yeah. nice casting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, anybody who can speak with the accent already that we don't have to train.
It's good. That's good.
He's in.
Did anybody else cast him?
I did. Matt, do you have one?
I did not cast him.
I'm going Jeremy Renner, just because you need somebody like compact and muscular, maybe the age difference, maybe not quite
so
the
like,
love interest for
the
Miley.
Love for Miley Cyrus.
Hey, listen.
This summer, Miley Cyrus and Jeremy Renner.
She skews old. Because clearly she has daddy
yes,
issues, so that's how she would get back.
The Bryce character, mm-hmm. I recast Jason Jasinski from the 8-Bit Gladiator.
That is a, that is an inside joke.
It's totally
a deep
an inside
cut.
Joke. But wow. But he looks just like him.
He does. Yeah. He's kind of like cool and wispy and uh-huh. I don't know how to describe
and
him.
And a computer
yeah.
expert.
And yeah, but he doesn't have the accent, but that's okay. We no. can work on it.
Did you, did, is there anyone else that you guys recast?
I do. I went with Jim Parsons from The Big Bang Theory. Also
oh
not somebody who can do the accent, although I bet he could.
I
that's
feel
Sheldon
like your version
Theory.
Of Tomb Raider should have been directed by Uwe Boll.
It might be.
You
yeah.
have the most random
or
cast.
Mick G. Actually, Crispin Glover, come to think of it, would have been nice in
yes,
this too.
Yes, he would have. Yeah, did you?
I had Jonah Hill in the brass character.
Oh my
oh,
god!
Wow,
there was like a lot of comedic possibilities.
That
absolutely.
Been, that would have been the funniest Tomb Raider movie ever. if you had Miley Cyrus to yours,
he probably would have been better. It would have been Jonah Ray or Jonah Ray.
Jonah Ray.
Jonah Ray. Wow.
Really, from The Nerdist.
It's a Freudian slip there, yeah, Jonah.
It's a stretch, but, you know.
All right. Let us know your thoughts, maybe your fantasy castings, whatever, on our Facebook page. You can just find us. Search on Facebook for The Editing Bay. And we are just a couple days away from our live show
yes.
at the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano. This is a podcast and a movie, Masters of the Universe, Dolph Lundgren. You don't want to miss out on this. $5 to get in. We're going to have all kinds of goodies for you. We've got T-shirts that Joel's going to have on sale.
Woot, woot.
And
the end.
Nice. Okay. I'm like pausing. Like, oh, does he have something that he wants to say?
Nope.
Make sure you bring cash. This is going to be a cash event.
Yeah.
Joel's got the T-shirts. They're running about what? $15.
Selling for $15, and you'll also get a raffle ticket along with them. Is that what
we got? We got raffle tickets are separate. Also got the we got drinks. You can come out and get some drinks and stuff. We're gonna have all kinds of cool prizes we're giving away.
It's exciting.
We've got it listed there on the information page of our event page on Facebook. And you can also check out more info on our webpage, editingbay.com. Not the editing bay, not the edit bay, not edit bay, editingbay.com.
No one's ever
editing the bay.
Just that way we've got all the bases covered. And you're also going to enjoy a cool opening set from Matt Doden.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to
no,
it.
No, this guy fucking yeah. kills. I saw him on stage, what was that, a couple of months ago, mm-hmm. and he just fucking brought down the house.
And then
I'll have to have the after... break on that.
So if you could just
I'm more of an underpromise kind of guy.
I mean, he's all right. You know,
well, then he's on the right podcast, setting the bar low. So, and then after the movie, Matt's going to join us to record and talk about the flick.
Fuck yes.
I am fucking excited.
Yeah,
about
come
this,
on
man.
Out.
I
doors,
thought it would never come.
Doors open at 7 o'clock, and we'll see you out there. And until next week, for Joel, for Matt, and for Jeff, thank you very much, sir. My name's Joe, and we'll check you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, I'm Joe.
And I'm Joel.
From the Editing Bay here on the Next Wave Radio Network, and we've got something very fun for all of you Next Wave listeners. We've got our first live show coming up April 11th at the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano, if you're in the DFW area. We're going to be watching the live-action Dolph Lundgren He-Man movie
yes.
with a whole bunch of cool giveaways. We've got plastic swords to give to people so they can hold them aloft and call upon the power of Grayskull. We're also going to have little skull pencil erasers, all kinds of giveaways, raffles, door prizes, and some special surprises still on the way. We've also got a stand-up comedian,
uh-huh.
and then it's all going to be followed up with a live recording of the podcast where Joel and I are going to tear the movie a new one.
Joe, that sounds fantastic. However did we get the sponsorship for this?
Well, it's thanks to our friends at Duncanville Bookstore. They're located at 101 West Camp Wisdom Suite J in Duncanville, Texas. They sell comics, they sell toys, they have board games. Not only do they sell these things,
yes.
but they will buy them from you.
Ah.
So if you've got a bunch of crap sitting around that's taking up space and you're like, you know what, spring cleaning, or I could use a few extra bucks, or I want to buy some stuff at the comic shop but I don't have a whole bunch of cash on me, maybe I could trade some stuff in. All you got to do is call the guys up at 972-298-7546. Andy, Brian, those guys can help you out. If you want to check out their website, DuncanvilleBookstore.com, and you'll see them as well as Joel and I
Yay.
At our live show April 11th. For more details, you can check out our website. Joel, what is that?
That is editingbay.com. Not the editing bay, not edit bay, editingbay.com.
And yeah. right there, you'll find more info about the show. You'll find other episodes
yeah.
of the show.
All of them.
But more importantly, information about our live show, April 11th, the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano, $5, and we're going to be kicking things off at about 7:30. Hopefully, we'll see you there.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.